All right, we're with Joe Albahari of LinkPad fame and other things, and Yao 2011. Thanks for coming on Channel 9. So before we dive into LinkPad and stuff, let's talk a little bit about Link. What is it about Link that you're so excited about?
Well, Link's really the introduction to functional programming for C-sharp guys. So prior to Link in C-sharp, we pretty much had an imperative language. An imperative language is all about doing things. You do this, you do that, while loops, do loops, values whose variables whose values change. And that's one way of programming, but there's a whole new dimension which has come from the Lisp and the Haskell world, the functional world. And Link was really a way of introducing that functional goodness into C-sharp.
Right.
It's a consistent querying API. And that same querying API can be used for querying local object collections, also for querying databases, because it has a dual nature where it can expressions, lambda expressions that it boils down to, can become expression trees that can be at runtime traversed, introspected, and then they can turn into SQL statements and evaluate to a database. It can also, it's also for, it provides a consistent querying protocol for XML. And there's a there's parallel link too, plink, for parallelizing link queries. Very nice way to leverage parallelism. Yeah. It's endless. As recently, I think Aaron Myers, one of his latest projects, is Reactor Framework.
Yes.
And that, again, uses link. In fact, he managed to find a way to sneak monads, interestingly, into link queries. So the monadic bind you can do with the select many.
Yeah.
And that works very well with Reactor Framework.
Sure. Excellent, man. Now, speaking of the reactive framework, your talk today was C-sharp asynchrony, using the async await pattern. Sort of you explored
that's
that
right,
in a deep
yes.
way. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on the new model in C-sharp 5 for asynchronous computation.
There's really two ways of looking at it. You can say we've always been able to do asynchronous programming. It's just incredibly difficult. Because to do asynchronous programming, you need some way to handle continuation. So when an asynchronous operation's finished, you need to tell it to carry on doing something else. Now, in any non-trivial context, that becomes incredibly awkward and difficult to do. You've got to turn your program inside out in order to do that. Now, that's one way of looking at it, is that it means you can write that stuff as easily as you can write synchronous programming. But there's another interesting way of looking at it too, which is that we traditionally tend not to program asynchronously because it's so difficult. What we do instead is to get, say, a responsive user interface, is we'll spin up threads. We use things like Background Worker, which does threading. And essentially what's going on there is that you're creating a thread to solve a problem that for most part doesn't need, or typically doesn't need a thread. And the consequence of doing that is that you end up with a whole lot of thread safety or potential thread safety problems that you've manufactured unnecessarily.
Interesting. I also want to touch base with you on the difference between parallelism and concurrency. What's your take on that?
Parallelism is we typically talk about parallelism when we're with compute-bound work, when we're trying to get the calls hot. And so we've got an 8-call machine processor, and we want to get all of those calls hot. So we use a kind of a fork join, a divide and conquer strategy, to divide that work up into 8 lots, and we run all of those at once. And that's typically what we're talking about when we talk about parallelism. Whereas with asynchrony, it's more about we've got some operation that takes a while to run, and that operation itself might be doing parallel things, or it might simply be I/O bound, so we're waiting for a web page to download, and we want to maintain, say, a responsive user interface while that web page downloads or while that compute bound activity happens. So how do we deal with that latency in a way that kind of concurrency we typically talk about asynchrony and how we solve that?
Why did you make LinkPad?
Well, I saw a need for it, and I didn't like the idea that we couldn't just run database queries in a proper query language like Link. You had to use SQL to do it. It was kind of jokingly, but it was also very serious that it is simply for running ad hoc queries, which is where it started, ad hoc database queries. There are so many ways in which Link is just a more productive querying language than SQL. You can sometimes there are SQL queries which are that long, and they just boil down to that many lines in Link, and the the query you get in Link is they're quite often so much more accurately, they're close to the domain model. They're describing what you actually want far more accurately than tersely, and it's easier to read that than it is a SQL query. You can read a SQL query and spend quite some time deciphering what it's actually trying to do. Yeah. Whereas a well-written Link query, you can often very quickly just see from the query exactly what you're trying to do.
Sure. And in LinkPad, you can run it sort of like in a real-time experience, right? Like,
yes.
I mean, and that's a nice thing to learn.
It's a great way to learn.
Yes.
It's a great learning tool and a prototyping tool. Mm-hmm. And LinkPad has also grown into a general code scratchpad, which is how I was using that today in the presentation.
Mm. Excellent, man. And what about how it's going to evolve?
LinkPad?
Yeah, like what are some thoughts? Like what? How are you thinking about taking
there's,
it?
There's a number of ideas I've got with that. Just recently I've added some new features. So there's ability to write custom extension methods and visualizers for it.
Nice.
So people can open tables now and into grids. I've written actually a visualizer not so long ago for Reactor Framework. And there's actually two visualizers now for Reactive. So you can either dump an observable, and it will just show you as the values appear.
Nice.
Or you can call dump live and actually see the values change in place on the screen. And you can even put you can dump a WPF element through that method and actually watch. You can write effectively a WPF visualizer for an observable, an iObservable, and actually watch it change like a progress bar.
Nice. Now, speaking about RX, or Reactive Framework, how do you see that sort of, like, what's your mental model of RX versus the async await asynchrony model? I mean, RX is also for asynchronous computation.
It is, exactly. And the two complement each other beautifully because Reactive Framework is the functional side, whereas asynchronous functions is the imperative side. So unlike Haskell, which is a purist language, C-sharp's a pragmatic language, so it embraces both approaches equally. And it's also C-sharp is kind of meant for general purpose programming. So it's not the learning curve is not too difficult for people. So, but the ideas came from Haskell, I think, very much with that. But as I said, you've got the functional side, which is reactive, and that tends to work very well when you've got lists of things.
Mm.
Generally, functional programming works well with lists. And I know people that are using Reactive Framework and in finance and trading, and very successful. And the nice thing you can do with that is if you want to use both Reactive Framework and async functions, the two play together nicely. You can actually go between the two worlds. You can segue between you can await an observable, and you can call to observable on a task, and that means you can effectively go into that iObservable monad, do your bind using the query expression, and then when you want to asynchronously exit that monad, you can do that with your await statement, and that works very nicely.
Excellent, man. I mean, you use the M word, you know, and of course, jokingly last night, Simon Peyton-Jones in his keynote was talking about, man, if we could go back in time and not name this thing a monad, perhaps people wouldn't be afraid of it.
Exactly.
But definitely what Eric and team have done in RX is they've abstracted away the fact that you are doing monadic programming.
You're doing pretty much, yes. When you're using two from statements in a query expression, you're effectively doing a monadic bind. It's very clever how he did that.
Absolutely, man. And so tell us a little bit about you, about your history. Like, how did you get into this stuff? What's going on here?
In fact, my brother, he's used to work at Microsoft on the Entity Framework team.
Okay.
And he got an interest with O'Reilly, and he wrote C-Sharp Essentials, and then he has a co-author on an earlier edition of C-Sharp in a nutshell. And so he asked me if I would help with the next edition of C-Sharp in a nutshell, and I ended up doing writing most of the book. Then, so he was quite busy at Microsoft. So that's kind of how that took off, and that's how I got the interest in Link and in C-Sharp 3.
And your background as a programmer, what is it?
I've been programming since the early days of personal computers, the Apple II, and even before that.
Okay. And in some sense, do you ever foray out of the .NET sort of managed world and play around with other languages? And
I've not. I really would. I've had many times. I've had an intention to learn Haskell because that's the language I'd probably like to learn the most. It sounds to me one of the most interesting languages. But I think you need a practical application. You need something you actually need to get done in it in order to really for that to sink in.
Sure. Can you tell us, give us a little bit of experience of making LinkPad? Like, what were some of the big challenges you had?
It's a typical application in the sense it starts out small and then grows. And if you knew exactly where it would be when you started, you could do a much better job. So you've got those kind of challenges. It's also, itself is a very asynchronous program, and it would have been a lot easier to write with asynchronous functions. And managing the thread safety has been one of the hardest things to do in LinkPad, is dealing with the thread safety.
Interesting. Can you talk about that a little bit?
It's the way it works is that it's a highly concurrent application in that if you say you want to query a database, it needs to build a typed data context behind the scenes. And that has to happen asynchronously, otherwise the whole UI would block. But what's interesting is that there's a number of parties effectively need to subscribe to that information. So you've got the queries themselves will need that for compilation. The schema explorer on the left will need to show that the structure of the database. And also the auto-completion service needs to be aware of that. And that at any time can change because you might want to refresh that schema. You might it refreshes automatically, in fact, if it detects a schema change. So getting all that to play well is kind of tricky, that there are some interesting patterns that are involved in asynchrony.
I bet. Now, let me ask you, I mean, are you going to rewrite it or add some of this async await stuff to it?
It's there's a compatibility issue because there is a 3.5 version I tend to support as well as the 4.0 version.
Yes.
And it's also, you have to be very careful before, you know, rewriting something that works because there's going to be quite a cost and there's a whole lot of unit tests you have to retrofit and you look at the, you know, how to deliver best value and whether writing new features might be a better way to do it.
Probably, I think from the user's perspective, yes. That's going to be good. Now, do you have sort of input from the community in terms of actual features?
Yes. Have you heard of User Voice?
Yes, of course.
Uservoice.com, that's the main forum for new feature ideas.
Excellent. And we, of course, use that at Microsoft as well.
Right. I've noticed, on Visual Studio, isn't it now? It's on that, and it works very well.
It does. I mean, it's a nice way, a simple way to, you know, provide feedback and then have the community vote on it, because I can assure you, numbers matter to feature teams.
Yes.
Right? So if X thousands of people want this,
absolutely,
it's not rocket science to figure out what they're probably going to put their, you know, customers are speaking. Let's deliver what they're asking for. And that's cool. And you have a lot of customers. How many users do you think you have for LinkPad?
It's hard to say because of the there have been you know, hundreds of thousands of downloads, but it's hard to know how many are actively using it.
So link to the cloud, link to big data, link to whatever. I mean, and what Bart's working on is what's sort of linked to everything. And that's the grand vision.
Yes.
What do you think of that? What does everything have to be?
To me, it's of it can be a gimmick. That's a trap with link to everything, because to me, for it to be useful, it needs to support a good set of the query operators, and not just support a number, but also the way in which they can be composed. Because one of the really nice things about link is that you can composable or compositional. So you can take a query and just splice that in to the expression inside that can be a predicate on another query operator. And that's what really makes it powerful. And providing that it is a good implementation and it lets you do the kinds of queries that you would want to do, then it's a really good idea. Having link is a single consistent interface that people can learn and use everywhere.
Absolutely, and you know they are. I mean, it's definitely one of the most popular features in C#. At least the newer ones, as you said, from 3.0 on. I mean, link is very, very popular.
It's brilliant, yeah.
Now, are there some areas of link that you'd like to see that could get better? That you're like when you think about
it
evolving.
I mean, I would like to see link to SQL get more love. I think that is. Because it, at the moment, its entity framework is Microsoft's, in terms of the database, link to data.
Okay.
That's their preferred option. But I, The link to SQL's got a lot of simplicity. It is very difficult to get a good translation engine from link to SQL, and the link to SQL APIs traditionally have the best, although entity framework's improving all the time. And they could improve it even further. I think they can go further with that. Mm. And things like, for instance, updates, I think that could go. They could be predicated through link queries as well.
Hmm. So updating a database table or tables.
Yes.
Interesting. And what about one of the things about SQL for sure that's really interesting or widely used anyway are stored procedures, right? And so how do you call a stored procedure from a link query?
There's a couple of ways to do it. It really is just helping you with the plumbing. It's not really doing anything useful. The problem with stored procedures is that the results that you get back is effectively dynamically typed, so you don't know in advance necessarily what it's going to be. And if you want to query that itself, the results set, the query is going to run locally on the client rather than on the server. Now, SQL servers had table value functions for quite a while, and that kind of addresses that problem in that the results that you get from a table value function, if you query that, the query can run on the server. Mm. That happens both in SQL and in link to SQL. You can literally, in link to SQL, if you query a table value function, that query is then converted to SQL and pushed to the server. And I suggest that if people want to use... there are things that you can't do in link, you can only do in SQL, and you want to then run some link on top of that. Mm-hmm. I was just encapsulating those SQL expressions into a table value function, and then you've got something you can then call through your link object relational mapper, and you can actually query as well and combine with, you can join it to other tables as well, and that's a lot more powerful.
Now jumping back to async, what are your thoughts on the direction that is going to be taken with the two keywords? Do you think that, you know, what's the difference, in your mind, like, what do you think of that? That's my question.
I think it will become ubiquitous because it makes it so easy that there's a temptation at the moment that when we want to do concurrency, we try and avoid doing it. That's our first reaction, is let's only do concurrency if we really need it because of the extra work and the perceived overhead and so on. But because async makes it now, those async functions makes it so easy, people can just use this everywhere. In fact, any function, any method in your program that takes more than 50 milliseconds to run, there's a good argument for saying that should now be asynchronous. So we're going to see a massive shift towards that because that then creates that async all the way down your call stack. If you've got async all the way down your call stack, you can then keep, if you're writing a UI app, a rich client app, you can keep everything on the UI thread except everything that specifically needs to be on a worker thread. And that means that the whole issue of multi-threading becomes a lot easier because there's a lot less of it. You've got the same responsive user interface, same concurrency, but you've got most of your code's actually running on the UI thread, and only the bits that really need to are running on other threads.
Excellent. And then, of course, that solves the synchronization problems and retention and all the nightmare that people experience. Mm. That's definitely really interesting. But in some sense, I mean, you mentioned the 50 millisecond sort of universal guideline. It's interesting that you said that because in the Windows 8 Metro, which we announced to build, is a very, very asynchronous platform.
Right? Yes.
WinRT is all about asynchronous everywhere.
Absolutely.
And in some sense, developers, whereas the async await model in C# is arguably very simple conceptually, you still, as a developer, need to understand asynchrony, right? When do I need to be asynchronous? How can I do this? Can you do things incorrectly? Can I use async await, too much or not enough or in the wrong places? Or how I have to still wrap my head around the asynchronous model. And people need to start thinking asynchronously.
Mm. Yes. It's easier than it sounds. Mm. It's, in fact, very similar to iterators in C#, yield return. Mm. Conceptually, it's similar. And similar, if you've ever used iterators, once you've actually used them, it is a lot easier to use than it is to actually really understand what's going on underneath. Mm. And there's almost a point to which you don't fully need to understand all of the details. But there is, as you say, there is a level that you do need to, I mean, there's no getting away from having competency in those concepts of asynchrony and concurrent. Otherwise, you know, you can go wrong if you,
sure.
you know.
And we need to train developers and give them lots of guidance, besides just new keywords and new features.
Yes.
Right?
That's right. It is. There's more training involved, although the flip side now is that need to use things like locks and other synchronization primitives, you know, things like a manual reset event, that you don't need to use those so much now.
Mm. Interesting. Now, there's also the notion of scale, right? One of the great things about RX is its ability to linkify or link over or link to, you know, streams of billions of events, hundreds of millions of events, efficiently and effectively. So have you found that with the async await model does that work for like in a stream context with lots of data? That's my question.
Sure. I mean, it would depend how you do it. One thing I've noticed is the way they've implemented it is that if you've got a method that awaits, but you're able to serve the results out of the cache and you can return before awaiting, then the way the compiler will translate that is that there will be no bounce to the thread pool. There'll be no continuation. So it takes a nice little shortcut there. Mm. And that certainly helps with efficiency. And as I said before, it's not in the sense of competition. If Reactor Framework is doing the job well now, that you can continue using it.
Yeah.
And you can. There are probably some places in your program, though, where you might want to asynchronously await the whole observable, and that gives you that extra ability.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that, you know, I guess, you know, in sort of the kind from the developer's perspective, or looking about what happens a lot in the industry and the reality for software engineers, is there's always... we always have the ability to have to make a choice between which similar thing should be used versus something else. So not really that it's RX versus async.
Yes.
But it's like when to use RX and when to use async. Mm. Because whereas you could use RX for almost everything you can use for async, you probably can't use async for almost everything you use for RX. So you have to understand conceptually what tool is the right tool for the job.
Mm.
And the other thing I've noticed is RX is a little bit more conceptually difficult.
Yes, that's a very good point. In fact, that is I would say, a 3-month learning curve from the feedback I've got with RX. Mm. And for a lot of applications, people won't benefit enough from RX to justify the learning curve. So this is one thing where the async functions, they do shine, is I think there is a learning curve too with them, but I think it's quite a lot less. Mm. It's quite a lot easier. And for most kind of applications, I'm not sure how much benefit people will get from RX. Mm. RX is one of those things where when you do really need it, it's amazing what it will do for you. Yeah. And, you know, people in trading and so on have discovered that.
Absolutely.
And I think the majority will probably not really go into much depth with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think one of the indications that RX is a good fit is if you're working with asynchronous lists. So rather than, you know, getting a value asynchronously and doing something with it, you're actually working with a whole series of values that are coming, and they're coming in asynchronously at different times.
Mm.
And then you want to do some kind of transformational composition with those events, with some other types of events. That's the indication that RX is a good fit.
And so finally, I guess, you know, what are you working on these days? Like, what are your big problems that are keeping you busy?
Well, the link pad's always, there's always more to do on
that.
That's
the number one thing? Okay.
That's the number one thing. There's always more to do. I've also got the C# 5 in a nutshell coming out next year sometime.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's your take on Roslyn, Project Roslyn, which, of course, is not C# 5. It's distant.
VNext.
Or V something, exactly.
Yes.
What's your take on it?
It's very exciting. Mm. It'll certainly be useful to me. It'll be useful to LinkPad because it means LinkPad's auto-completion service at the moment, it doesn't support VB, only C#.
Mm.
And it's a lot of work to get the libraries I'm using working with VB. But the Roslyn handles those things. In fact, because that's what they're going to use for the compiler, it means that all of that goodness is now available. That whole engine of lexical parsing, semantic parsing, binding, and IL generation is now all become available. And that this will have lots of exciting possibilities in kind of metaprogramming aspect-oriented programming. There'd be lots and lots of applications, I think, for Auslan.
Excellent, man. And it's really cool to hear that it's going to actually directly benefit you and LinkPad.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Mm. So you hear that, Anders and company?
Mm.
That's awesome. Well, hey, thanks for coming on Channel 9. And thanks again for creating LinkPad.
Thank you.
Nice
to meet you, Charles.
Cheers.